Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
And Jason, as we now veer into the absolute bleep show in Berea, I think the Browns have a chance to do the funniest thing in the world on Sunday, and that is beating the Baltimore Ravens in a game you have no business winning at a point in the season when everyone pretty much agrees the season is over.
If they win, people will be mad that they're messing up their draft status, their draft stock.
I don't think everyone.
Probably. Because it's Baltimore, you'll still love beating Baltimore. Mm-hmm. So I probably shouldn't say that. Any other team. Fans are just going to be mad, period. Yeah. No matter what. They're just going to be mad.
I think that's a pretty salient take. I do think there are people out there, even pragmatically, in the week, you can say, just lose, baby. And then you get to Sunday and you enjoy a win.
Of course.
Even if you know. Lovie Smith, and it ended up not sinking the organization, but Lovie Smith got fired with spite because he won the extra game that took the Texans from the number one pick to I think the number nine pick, and then they had a trade up or something like that.
No,
they had the two pick.
I vaguely remember. I don't remember the numbers.
But we are in that point of the season where I don't know that the players, at least on the defensive side of the ball, are going to give up. And I think that could lead to some things there, even though I think the organization has started to move away from we have to win at all costs.
The organization has moved away from we have to win at all costs. What evidence do you have of that? Because I still think they're trying like hell to win.
I think going to DTR instead of Jameis. If we said who gives you the best chance to win, it is Jameis. And when DTR is healthy, it's going to be DTR again, no matter what Jameis does.
Yeah, it is going to be Dorian again.
Yeah.
I don't know how long it's going to take, though. But I do think that they really like Dorian.
Mm-hmm.
They really like him. But, yes, in the moment, because Dorian has hardly started any games and Jameis is a veteran, you would have to say Jameis gives you a better chance to win games. But you need to know what you have in DTR. You obviously need to know if this guy can be the guy moving forward or not. So from that aspect, I hear you. But regardless of why Kevin's giving up the play calling, whether it's his own doing or someone forcing him, whatever, that part for this doesn't matter. It's because they're trying to win. That's why they're doing it, because they're trying to win games.
So you don't think it's because they're trying to evaluate Ken Dorsey?
No, I
don't. The other one I thought is Kevin trying to distance himself from an absolutely abysmal offense, which might help him keep his job. That was another way of thinking of it.
No, I'm sure you guys talked about it yesterday. We don't have to go through it all again, but it's so weird that you have this offense that was fairly high functioning. It was rolling last year. He won games with PJ Walker. He beat the 49ers with PJ Walker. And you throw the whole thing out, and I'm totally convinced that it's because Deshaun was embarrassed by Joe and all the success that Joe had in this offense and the way that the city just fell for Joe. So you throw all that out. Okay, you bring in this coordinator who now has more experience running the type of system your quarterback wants to run. It's an abject fit. It's a total disaster. And now is the time, now that that quarterback is gone, now is when you decide to do this? The timing of it makes zero logical sense. Zero.
Yeah, I thought one of the things that I've heard in kind of defense of this is, Kevin didn't want to put the offense on Ken because it wasn't working, and he didn't want to sabotage Ken.
That's ridiculous.
I would also agree with that.
That's nonsensical.
Yeah.
The one that I think has some merit to it is the offense is such a mess, and the offensive line, the penalties and the they can't even get lined up right, and some of the pre-snap stuff and the motion stuff, and that's unacceptable. That's Freddie Kitchens level of Browns play.
Yeah.
And if he's saying I have to address that, okay, I guess I could buy that. But my point is, for this conversation, is they are not punting on the season as a staff at all. even if they go to play in Dorian. Now, I do think like they need to evaluate Dorian, and they need to see either you have your guy going forward, or which is not very likely, and it is more likely is you're going to be bad enough to then be in position to go get your guy. But I listen, when they promoted DTR last week, that was not a 1 week thing.
Mm-hmm.
That was the direction they were going in. It's just the kid can't stay healthy.
Is that more about DTR though, or is it more about Jameis?
I think it's both.
Okay.
I think they really like Dorian. They want to get another look at him. And you know, when they signed him, I said how teammates love him. But how
do
much
they
say, I don't even care about that part. My point is, as an organization, can you trust him? Can you trust him to lead your franchise? When he's calling play, when he's changing play calls at the goal line to get guys contract bonuses, that guy loves him.
Mm-hmm.
Or to get that guy his first touchdown. I remember exactly, it was a contract bonus or whatever it was. But it infuriated the coach on the other sideline and infuriated other teams around the league. That's not how you behave. That's not how you do it. I just don't know that you can trust him with your organization. So the move to Dorian was not for 1 week, but you know, he plays last year, gets the concussion, comes back, last five snaps against Houston in garbage time, dislocates his hip, out for the year, plays on Sunday, finger out again. He can't stay healthy. And if you can't stay healthy, then you're not the guy. And that's the frustrating part. He plays with just this reckless abandon. Like, dude, you're going to get yourself killed. This isn't college anymore. Like, you can't be helicoptering through the air down the sideline. That's not how you play quarterback in the NFL. You will not last. So they've got to get that under control. And then we'll see. I have no idea how long this finger is going to keep him out. I have no idea. But if he was healthy, Dorian would be starting on Sunday. It would not be Jameis.
So I actually agree with the decision to go to DTR. I think Jameis might actually win you one too many games to be where you need to be.
He might win you one or two games more than DTR might. He might. But again, I think you're gauging, you know, I think they feel pretty confident they know what they have in Jameis.
Mm-hmm.
They want to see what they have in the kid.
So, but I think playing DTR, and I don't think it should just be exclusive to quarterback, I think if there are people who have been, and I'll say like a Jed Wills, like, because the argument is always, well, who do you have? Well, find somebody who can play through the snap. And I'll take that over a guy who every 5 seconds I'm watching going, hey, why'd you go that way to yeah. Trey Hendrickson? Like, I do think, like, if it's not about losing, right? If we're gonna straddle the line of trying to be competitive and understand that we're in evaluation mode, right? Which is that's the in between winning and tanking. If you're gonna do that, then there are some guys who it's just obvious aren't it, and maybe don't have it, and maybe don't love football. And I'll start with Jed. They're like, that's an easy place to start if you really want to show people that you're still serious about competing as opposed to winning.
But who do they have that's better?
No, it's not about better. Jed is who he is, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is not about better. It's about, can you get somebody to show up and play hard? Because I think the worst thing you can be is losing and putting guys out there who, yeah, I don't care how good you are. If you don't play through the whistle, what kind of culture are you building in that?
But you can't put somebody out there at that spot who's going to get your quarterback killed.
I think Jed is getting your quarterback killed. I think he unabated. He let Trey Hendrickson.
He's not going to be back next year, I don't think. I think they've made that decision. Normally, if you look at the Browns' history, if guys get to their fifth-year option and they aren't signed, how many times do they come back? Like, they have a philosophy of get in early, not late.
Mm-hmm.
Set the market. Don't let the market dictate you. And, like, Jerry Jeudy comes in, and they sign him before he even takes a snap. Myles Garrett, they extended. The minute they could extend Myles Garrett, they did.
Mm-hmm.
The minute they could extend Nick Chubb, they did. They did not extend Baker. They have not extended Jed. They have not extended Greg Newsome. I think they're probably all gone after this. I think once you make it to the fifth-year option, if they haven't decided yes or no on you, more time. And maybe, and I'm doing this off the top of my head, so maybe I'm missing somebody who played out their fifth-year option and then signed and stayed. Under this regime, I don't know that we have an example. I just think Jed's probably gone. I think Greg's probably gone. Just because I just know how they operate, that if you believe in a guy, sign him early.
So do you think winning is the number one priority going forward?
For the coaching staff, yes. The coaches always try to win.
Yeah, you have to because you
players and coaches still want to win. They are trying to win.
But organizationally, and which where I think some of these decisions are coming from.
I think we're getting to the point where winning is not that important.
So,
but it puts the guys like Kevin in a tough spot because you're coaching for your job. You're trying to win games to save your job.
So I am empathetic to that. I don't want to make it. I just want to just throw that away. I understand he's coaching for his job. But coaching for your job isn't just about winning. Like, I think the easiest way to keep the locker room is to win, right?
Sure.
The other ways to keep the locker room are to keep everybody engaged and make sure the leadership component is intact. And I think through 7 weeks now, whether it's them talking about the fan cheering thing and the just completely tone-deaf messaging there, whether it's how they play in games and just a lack of fight at weird points, the self-inflicted stuff, not taking care of, like, they're a veteran locker room. So, like, I think that's the part for me where, okay, you're no longer the play caller. Focus on fixing whatever leadership issues or whatever connective tissue issues are the problem. And by the way, that also might lead to winning, but at the very least, It's going to mean you don't lose the locker room or at least have a fighting chance.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I think if this keeps going down this road, he could lose the players. He may have already. I have no idea. I don't know.
I think when you start to look at these, I'm speculating 100%. Yeah. I think there's no way he has him 100%. There's no, you know, this is so bad. This is so bad.
It's the worst it's ever been under him. That's for sure.
And it is so, like, when we're talking about one side of the ball being non-functional. Like, it's almost impossible to put into words how bad the offense is. It's really tough for me to believe at 1-6 Kevin has this locker room. I think they still like him. But I don't know Kevin was ever the guy they died, you know, lived and died for anyways. And now you start 1-6 and I think they are feeling pressure. I think you've got 10 games to prove that you can keep that locker room or get them back.
I think the offensive guys last year really respected him and bought in. Defense, it's weird because he's an offensive-minded guy. He's an offensive play caller. I don't know how much he's really around the defense. So I don't know that they really have a strong opinion one way or the other. I know it sounds weird to say about the head coach, but I've just never really gotten a strong impression one way or the other. But the offensive guys last year seemed to really buy in, and why wouldn't you? Like, look what he did. It's incredible what he did. This year, I don't think he's lost them, but I think it has the capability of that happening on the path that they're on.
216-474-0092. The Browns have a chance to do the funniest thing on Sunday, which is beat Baltimore, which to some segment of the fan base will upset them, which will be even funnier. Not intentional. We're not talking ha-ha funny. We're talking a different kind of funny. But if winning isn't the number one priority for the Browns, what would you call that? Because there's one word it can't be called yet, but there could be some signs that could be coming. That's next on 92.3 The Fan. The optics of this, I feel like maybe we should switch chairs just because it looks like it's like Preston and Wee Man from Jackass 20 years ago.
Oh, my God. Let's not get carried away.
I just called myself a guy who is 150 pounds heavier. I think I took the brunt of that insult, not you.
Well, I took the hoodie down after seeing that video. That was not a good look.
Yeah.
I wasn't even paying attention.
That's all right. No. Nobody has pointed that out on social media. They're very friendly on social media.
Oh, it's great. Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody ever says anything. Somebody earlier, I wore like a nice polo in. I can't remember if it was this week or it was probably this week. I don't know. Time's a flat circle. But somebody's like, why does Nick look like a traffic cone? And here's the thing. It was such a specific and accurate insult that I just had to like it. Like, sometimes you like see like somebody on Facebook and, you know, never read Facebook comments, by the way. But you look on Facebook and it's like, this guy sucks and his wife should leave him. And you're like, all right, there's some validity there. But let's take 10 miles an hour off the fastball. But when they get it right, you just have to like it and say, well done, and move the hell on.
I think there's more vitriol on Twitter than there, or X, or whatever we're calling it today, more than Facebook.
Oh, I think it's probably even now, but I think you're right. Like, the discourse on
Twitter is toxic.
Yeah, and like, in a way, I mean, I think I was talking about that, like, you know, I just blew my lid on Monday. I did. I was just so fed up with this Browns organization and the situation was put in. But, like, you know, everybody's talking about fans booing or fans cheering Deshaun's injury.
Yeah.
And my thought was, all right, where were these players when countless women would talk about how the Browns trading for Deshaun Watson with all those allegations out there made them feel,
yeah,
and grown-ass men shouting them down on social media,
yeah,
and calling them vitriolic names? Where are those players then? Because they seem pretty quiet, or maybe they just weren't on Twitter all of those days or TikTok all those days. Like, I think I'm not happy that Deshaun got hurt. I'm just happy for now the situation's over. I'm happy it can be about anything but Deshaun for the first time. Even if that's losing, I'm just happy that we just don't have to continue to have that conversation, because it was no win no matter where you were on the Deshaun conversation spectrum.
Yeah. That's, I've been pretty clear. I think he's taking his last snap for the Browns. I think it's over.
Mm-hmm.
I know logistically it not necessarily is the case, but I don't know how either side runs that back.
Yeah.
If you're him, why do you want to come back? Yeah. Why do you want to come back? Yeah. Why? Well,
and you also wonder, like, I kind of threw this out there on Monday. It was so bad. And it's clear, like, he is a defeated guy. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you want to have any chance to reclaim this. I don't know how you can do that here. Like, this is the textbook definition of clean slate.
Yeah.
Even to the point where it makes me wonder, he got a lot of money already. Does he say, and not the whole thing, but hey, I'll take a haircut if you take a haircut, if you help me get somewhere else.
Yeah.
And I don't know that answer. Maybe he just says, I'm not playing anyways. I'll just focus on rehabbing and they'll cut me at the end of next year. I don't know what he wants, but I could imagine a world in which he says, I don't ever want to step foot back in Cleveland ever again.
Yeah, I think that's probably how it'll go. You don't have to make that decision now. He doesn't have to make a decision now about giving money back. They can have that conversation later. That's plenty of time for that. But I think it's over, and I think there's a way. I'm not an NFL cap expert by any means, but I think that there's a way to designate him a post-June 1 cut next year and take massive, massive historic cap hits each of the next 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
But at least you're done with it.
This wasn't on the docket for today, but as you're talking about this, I'm big on learning your lesson. Like, as a normal person, life, when it administers a bleep kicking, I tend to wake up pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I don't tend to have to learn a lesson twice when it's a real lesson.
Yeah.
Are the Browns going to learn their lesson from this? Are they going to look back and realize what led to this decision? And I'm talking about not just because it's so easy to just put it on the Haslams. Just everybody's role in this decision. Do you think that they're self-aware enough or self-scouting enough to do that?
I don't know, because it depends on what the lesson is you're trying to learn.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Mm-hmm.
because I think there's multiple lessons to take from. I mean, we could really, I don't know what you wanted to talk about. We could really derail the whole thing and blow it up and talk about this. How deep do you want to go?
Let's just do it. Let's see where we go.
All right. So I do think, I've been thinking about this, and I was going to wait and write it when the whole thing's over. But I think when they said they wanted to do this, when they were all in and they flew to Houston to see him, I thought at the time, like, you're going to have an uncomfortable press conference. It's going to be ugly. You have a lot of really uncomfortable questions to answer. And then you kind of get back to football and you go. And I think they probably felt like that's how it would go. And that's not how it went. Because if you remember, like, the New York Times story with the 67 or whatever the number, like, it was a mind-blowing number. That came after the trade. Mm-hmm. The HBO special came after the trade. It's like, and the Browns said they did their due diligence when they acquired them. And I know part of their due diligence was talking to, you know, Rusty Harden's attorneys, like his team of attorneys, and the women that worked for him went back to Gainesville and did some work on Deshaun and all that. But the Browns said they did their due diligence and they were comfortable with it. There is no way on earth that they knew there was a New York Times story coming with 67 different women lobbying allegations at Deshaun. There's no way. Mm-hmm. So I just think it got worse and worse and worse and worse. And I don't think anyone saw that coming. And I know that maybe that's naive to say because the original allegations were gross, but it just kept getting worse after the trade. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then obviously and listen, you can get as angry as you want. If he plays well, a lot of people don't care about the allegations, but he never played well. Never lived up to the contract. You know, Kobe Bryant is martyred today. Ben Roethlisberger left a hero in Pittsburgh. But Deshaun never played up to the contract. And Kobe obviously had deep ties to L.A. Ben had deep ties to Pittsburgh. Cleveland didn't know this guy from Adam. And obviously there was a deep tie to Baker. So there's a lot. So if the lesson to be learned from this, I guess I said all that to say, if the lesson to be learned from this is stop chasing players with bad character, I don't know if they learned that lesson or not.
No. I mean, it is a pro
maybe
sports.
to this extent, you say we can't do that again. If the lesson to be learned from is owners who just go and go and push and push and push and push and push, because I didn't think Baker was good enough. I still stand by that. Baker wasn't good enough when he was here. He was not good enough. And he's playing fine in Tampa. Like, this is who he is. He's going to have years where he looks pretty good. He's going to have years where he looks not so great. But can he win you games when it really matters, when it's late and close? And so I thought they needed to move on from Baker and try and do better. So I understood why they went this route. But what role will ownership learn in this? Of, they've been learning lessons for over 10 years now. Have they learned any lessons? Because they're right back where they started.
So I think there is, I think Baker does have a ceiling, and there's nothing wrong with that. You can be Kirk Cousins and win a lot of games in football. I think one potential lesson is, you bailed on Baker too early, meaning you hadn't consistently won. And so I think that they were trying to clear like three hurdles in the NFL all at once. And so the Deshaun trade to me represents a shortcut. There are really very few shortcuts available in the NFL. And usually they come with some sort of some trade-off that you're making there. Usually it's with an older quarterback and you're shortening your window a little bit, like with Matt Stafford in LA.
Yeah.
But like, specific to the Deshaun decision, it doesn't matter that 31 other teams would just talent-wise trade Baker for Deshaun in a heartbeat. It matters, where's your franchise been, where are they going, and how long have they had success?
I think what complicates where they were was Baker was up for a new contract, and I don't think they felt he was worth the type of money that it was going to take to sign him. And I'd agree with them. And it very rarely, I think it was Fran, I looked it up, I think Fran Tarkenton was the last time. Like, Deshaun, it's easy to look at him now and kick him when he's down. He was a really good quarterback in Houston. He was a better quarterback than Baker, period. He was a better quarterback than Baker. There is no debate between that. And a guy his caliber, the last time like a Pro Bowl quarterback became available in the prime of his career was like 60 years ago. These guys just never become available. So you're right. It probably was a bit of a shortcut because the Haslams looked around and said, well, We've tried for 10 years to develop a quarterback, and we can't do it, so let's just go buy one. And it didn't work. And look where it got him. And now it's probably as bad or worse than it's ever been.
I also think at some point, I think they asked themselves some questions. Are we comfortable with what Deshaun's accused of? Do we think this is going to get worse? And maybe these are some questions. Is Deshaun better than Baker? I tell you, I don't think they asked all the questions, which is, are we prepared? One, like, does Deshaun fit what we want to do? And they might have asked that a little bit, but did they really look at what Deshaun succeeded in? So I think it's like, you might have asked a couple key questions, but like, in hindsight, maybe you just go to the Deshaun offense, the Clemson, New England offense. Maybe just go with that. Did you go to Bill O'Brien? Did you talk to Clemson? Not just about the person, but you talk about concepts that worked for him. Like, those are things that I think over the last 3 years it felt like maybe they didn't answer. Or they asked and then disregarded the answer very quickly.
I reported at the time that Kevin and Deshaun sat in Rusty's office and cut clips together. And Kevin had an iPad, and the two of them were going over plays of, like, Kevin would show him a play. Okay, this is what you did. Okay, this is how we envision you in our system, running our system. And there seemed to be, at the time, a lot of agreement that it could work. Clearly, that has not been the case.
Pete Vucek joins us next. College football news. We'll talk about Ohio State going into another matchup here. We'll get into the big games around college football as well on 92.3 The Fan. Another big weekend coming up in college football. Ohio State, first game since the Oregon loss. And now they got Indiana. I keep going to the wrong schools. I got Nebraska this weekend. And that leads us to one of our favorite guests. Usually you hear him Thursday, 4 p.m. right here on Afternoon Drive. Today, Pete Vucek, College Football News, joins us about 20 minutes early. What's up, buddy?
Hey, Indiana, Nebraska, they're all red. I mean, they're all kind of the same thing. They're all, you know, they're traditionally just, you know, good in their respective sports. It's the same thing.
So the bad thing is I watched the Iowa game. I did a post-game podcast on the Ohio State-Iowa game. And earlier in the show, twice, without realizing it, I said Ohio State-Iowa this weekend. So that's where we are in fall, where my decrepit brain is forgetting that they've already played Iowa and that now we've got Matt Rhule's fighting Huskers this weekend.
Oh, it is crazy how it's just, you know, they all kind of blend into, you know, a big blob of football after a while, where it's like you kind of, especially in the new world where you have all these different teams and involved in the mix, like, is this the team that beat USC in the last second, or, you know, which team is going here? But, we're getting there, though. I mean, now it's kind of real. I mean, now we get to the point where, you know, it was fun, you know, all the good stuff that happened in the first couple months of the season. But now with Ohio State, it's, all right, step up and produce, because this is a game where, you know, I've said all year that this team is going to be in the national championship and it's win national title or bust because it's the best team in college football. Well, if that's kind of true, with 2 weeks off against the Nebraska team, that's okay. It's not great. This is one of those games where you come out and you just, you know, 48-10 them and just move on.
So I'm actually glad you said that, because if we had talked before Iowa depanced Nebraska 56-7 last week, I could have sold this fight a little bit more, because I actually love, one, Rayola's a really nice quarterback, and two...
Wait, you do realize you said in Iowa, not Indiana.
Good Lord, there we go again. Just, can somebody rush me to the hospital and check me for a stroke at this point?
Want me to hold up a big sign that says...
Yeah, can somebody? I just need to follow somebody's finger here. Not that finger, Jason. but before Nebraska got pantsed by Indiana 56-7, I kind of like where Matt Rhule's taking this. They're really, really good in the trenches, and Rayola is a nice quarterback. Do you? Is this a non-issue again because of that Indiana loss?
Yeah, they don't have any talent. You know, it's kind of lost on this. Look, the problem is, for people of a certain age who know Nebraska and remember this being a superpower of superpowers, they didn't get the Johnny Five Stars there. They always kind of had their way of getting the 98-pound guys off the farm and turned them into 300-pound monsters who could run. And they just the program just had a way of doing things. And sometimes when you get away from what made you great, is that, you know, they're built from within. got the guys for the lines, and then they got the the superstars from New Jersey or Texas to come in for just to kind of round out the piece of the puzzle. They don't have those guys. I mean, so it's yes, they're fine. This team certainly busted. I mean, there's not an effort issue in any way, and Raiola is that good. And they do have some parts, but they just don't have enough. I mean, it's the try-hard thing lasts only so long, and then all of a sudden you face a team with a lot of talent or a team that just kind of has everything working its way, which right now, Curtis works out, but right now Indiana is just humming because they just flat-out block and tackle better than everyone else.
I want to ask you how Indiana's doing that, but I guess it'll lead into a bigger question that I was talking to a kid who's a high school junior. He's a top recruit. He's like, everybody's looking at him, Alabama, Florida State, you name it, like Ohio State, they're all after this kid. And we were talking about old time recruiting and he was like, I can't believe like Nebraska was good back in the day. Like, and I felt like I was living in a history book. I'm like, yeah, I remember, like it wasn't that long ago. Actually, is there any chance for the Nebraskas to rise again in this new world of college football? And I guess maybe the answer is yes, because of Indiana, or how these teams that are down now, do they have any hope in the NIL era of coming back?
I don't know. Is Warren Buffett a Nebraska fan? I mean, he's a Nebraska guy, right? Get him to open up the NIL money. I guess that's where you start. I mean, you talk about this recruit you're talking to. It's like, okay, who's going to give him the most? I mean, who's going to give him that, the best deal? But yeah, of course. I mean, look, we look across the board of in college football right now. Like, you're right, Indiana is actually kind of pretty good, just because they actually did work the new world of college football in the way you're supposed to. You get a coach like Cignetti who really is just that good. He actually came in believing, hey, we're going to win here at Indiana. Yeah. Every coach says that, but yeah, he came in with a real game plan on how to do this, and part of that was, you get all the really good guys from James Madison. So they got the 8 key parts from those James Madison teams that were so good and kind of did things the way he likes to do them. And there you go. There's your infrastructure for what you already have. And they nailed the quarterback transfer, which Curtis Rourke, I was on a show last night. I thought he was going to a place like USC. I think there's a guy who you can kind of see that. That's a potential NFL talent with all the, he's not a top, 15 pick or anything like this, but that's one of those guys who goes like in the fourth-ish round and just sort of hangs around, all of a sudden starts for somebody and becomes, that guy who just is a starter for the next 8 years. That was a phenomenal get in the transfer portal for them. And it also helps that, their schedule isn't all that bad. They did not play Ohio State yet. They have not played Penn State yet. So they haven't had to deal with a bunch of killers, but who cares? You're Indiana and you've never won anything ever, and you're having probably the best year since, I think it's 67 is when they went to the Rose Bowl. But it's this is just, if you're Indiana, who cares? This is as fun as it gets right now.
Pete, I don't know if you've heard about this, if you've seen about this, if you heard about this. The Browns are bad again, and they're going to be looking for a quarterback. So as you are the king of college football, give me as we're looking around at guys who could be draft eligible, give me the quarterback that I should be pushing for the next 3 months, because we don't have actual good football to talk about.
I'm just going to say this to you personally. I don't know who's listening or anything like this, but for you and what you do for a living, for the love of God, do you want Shedeur Sanders? Oof. That you forget football, blah blah blah, Browns, whatever. They might win, they might not. Who cares? For your job, you want everything there is. You don't have to worry about your show getting up in the morning. You just can just roll out of bed, come on in, say Indiana's Iowa and Iowa's Indiana, and who cares? Just so Shedeur Sanders, light him up, and just have, and people are going to call in. That's kind of the guy who, I know there's issues with, him being all Shedeur-y and all that. He has been great. I mean, that guy, he is as tough as nails. He's in total command of that offense. He does have that sort of, mindset that comes from having an NFL Hall of Fame, father who is brilliant at his craft and kind of knows how to do things. And he gets hit a lot. And if you can take those sort of shots, which at some point there's going to have to be a business decision when it comes to him and how they're protecting him. He's the quarterback you want for Cleveland that might just be that difference maker. Yeah, Carson Beck's going to be good, and there are certainly other quarterbacks out there. It's not a real deep draft for other positions, but quarterbacks, if that's where you want to go, if you want the franchise guy to say, you know what, we need to wake this sucker up, that's where you go.
You realize we've gone from Baker Mayfield, the same thing.
Who's awesome now. I hated him coming out of college. I didn't think he was going to do anything, and now he's great.
I've had two straight quarterbacks that light up the phones. I want them to light up the box score and win me games. Come on, Pete. Don't wish more ego and drama on me. I thought we were friends, for God's sakes.
If you don't have a quarterback with ego and drama, then what are we doing here? It's all show business. That's what you. Of course you want to win games, but you know you need a lot more than that. But the fact that you know, the Deshaun Watson thing just, let's just say, didn't work, you need more than that, because you're seeing teams out there who are able to survive and keep moving on with guys like Sam Darnold under center and you know guys like Baker Mayfield under center. So you need everything else. But you can kind of see. I'm not going to put Shador in the Jaden Daniels category necessarily. But look, I'm here in Chicago. You can kind of see what you know. A Caleb Williams just sort of changes the energy, just changes everything about the entire franchise, and just kind of he's a true leader. He's a true alpha, and he's the true guy that you get. That's like, okay, this is his team now going forward.
Pete. Great stuff, buddy. Have a great weekend. Another great weekend of college football, and I know no one will enjoy it more than you.
Anytime, guys. You have a good one.
Thanks, Pete.
Pete Futek there on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. When we come back, another Browns player would like you to know it's not okay. Let's get into it. 92.3 The Fan.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole with its V-shaped stud configuration is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC's senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly.